In the words of the legendary Lou Gellerman, hello, dog fans, and welcome to the Sound the Siren podcast, because everything matters, including having the ability to sing a little song for our friends down in USC land. To quote The Rock, and lyrics by Lin-Manuel Miranda, you're welcome, because what happens when UW comes to LA and beats USC? You guys fire coaches. First Sark, now Alex Grinch. But you're still welcome, and we're going to laugh for a while about your still-employed athletic director, Jennifer Cohen. Just wait till you get to know her a little better. I am your host, Hooligan7, taking some joy out of a 52-42 win over USC. I'm joined tonight by Hood Husky, otherwise known as Beat Utah, Michael Big Tenix Jr., the artist normally known as J-Cap, and the Darker Knight, who signed in this evening as Johnson gonna score, no Trojans needed. How are you gentlemen doing tonight?
We good, man.
Cold-blooded.
Doing good.
Yes, absolutely cold-blooded. Well, without further delay, we can chat about beverages for a quick second. J-Cap, what do you got tonight, bud?
I'm just on that water, you know.
High quality, medium quality, low quality. Where's the?
It's high quality. It's high quality.
All right.
Nice and hydrating. You know. You know what it is.
Quality.
Nice. Hood, how about you?
You know, I'm gonna bring that. I got the high quality H2O for show. The Dasani recyclable aluminum can. But I also. Nice. You know, I got that hazy thing. I got the hazy IPA with me just to celebrate.
Just for a little sauce.
Just a little sauce. That 6.7 sauce. Just a little sauce for the U.S. Didn't need everything.
Darker Knight, how about you?
Oh, you know, I'm hanging out with my crazy cousin Awkwafina tonight. We up here just having a good old time. Ready for this thing to kick off.
Hey, she crazy as hell.
Crazy as hell, boy.
And I'm on a one beer only tonight. I have a Urban Family Brewing Company Dark Him. It's a dark sour ale with raspberry and strawberry.
Ooh, Dark Him?
Oh, ooh. Him. My guy be big sipping, boy. I tell you, that sounds good.
I wasn't actually planning on partaking of a beverage tonight, but I saw it. I'm like, ooh, I am a fan of the sours, and I'm like, ooh, that looks good. I need to try that. All right, let's move right along into stupid tweets. I haven't been as active on Twitter this last week, so I've got nothing. So you gentlemen are going to need to carry this one. Who's got one?
We're going back to a stupid tweet. At Helly James UW record prediction is off the dome. Gave us an L at Michigan State, an L at Oregon, an L at USC, and then he had us closing the season with four straight losses. It's just funny to go back and then to read some of these replies and quote tweets now. It's pretty good. And then also one from today, not necessarily a stupid tweet, but our friend Devious Duck Austin, he says, warm take, depending on where Bo Nix is drafted, I think he can have a better NFL career than Marcus Mariota. To which I had to quote and say, the bar's on the fucking ground, so that's not going to be hard.
The elite NFL quarterback, that is, Marcus Mariota.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Oof. Yeah. My comment, I think I chimed in on one of those replies. I think, Hood, you replied to it, and I replied to your reply about, like, I think Jake, or Helly James has taken too many shots to the dome.
That CTE acting up.
Yeah. TBI is a real thing. It's sad, folks.
Mm-hmm.
Any other stupid tweets that need to be discussed? I know, or I think we have a larger topic we could chat about here as well. It's not necessarily a tweet, but definitely some stupidity going around.
I just opened Twitter real quick while we were talking, and Devious Duck just gave us a new one 5 minutes ago, if you are interested. So someone quote tweeted the PFF college most completions on 20 plus yard throws and highlighting Mike and Caleb and Drake. And our friend at Dog206 quoted and said, "If you're not on the list, you're not a real Heisman candidate." And Austin said, "Bo has bigger fish to fry," with a quote that says, "Tom Brady averaged 7.4 passing yards per attempt in his career."
Anything to be included in the anything, dude. Like, it's ridiculous. Don't leave me out. It's ridiculous.
We must be going short fishing for guppies. Bigger fish to fry. Ain't no bigger fish in that little pond he's fishing in.
There's definitely, I mean, like, to bring Brady into the conversation, I definitely think that there's some things down south that are deflated, but I think it's the brain cells, not the balls. But I think, Hood, you and I had a quick discussion in the pre-show that I definitely think there is some stupid committee stuff going on right now where
you're
looking at, right now, the lowest-ranked undefeated team from one conference and the highest one-loss team from the same conference, with the undefeated team having played and beaten said highly ranked one loss team. And also, by the way, said highly ranked one loss team has one win against a team that currently has a winning record. UW has three of those, and there's going to be a fourth on Saturday.
And I think they have the second highest ranked, Pac-12 has the second highest ranked two loss team, and then the third highest ranked three loss team.
Yep.
But somehow we're the last ranked undefeated team. It makes a lot of sense. The committee's just, you know, that's tough. At this point, you know, we're the people's champ. That's kind of how I'm taking it. A lot of people are like, we're getting effed over, you know, but it's pretty obvious, you know, the why. But at the end of the day, it is what it is. All we can do is win. My stupid tweet is from, I don't know how you pronounce this, the first portion, but the Heifelidae Almond. Typically has some pretty solid, like, film oriented stuff. So when he's speaking, he can back it up with, you know, long winded film. When he had one yesterday that said Big Ten line play, and he highlighted, USC getting through UW's line and then UW getting through USC's line. So he's basically taking a shot at USC's trenches on offense and UW's trenches on offense. And in my head, I'm like, well, so then what separates UCLA and Oregon, you know? And then he goes on to say, well, like, UCLA is not involved. So you're basically just saying the only team that's going to the Big Ten with a quality offensive line to be able to deal with the Big Ten trenches on defense is Oregon. Asked him a why, sent me a article. But at the end of the day, like, that's kind of a, you know, a microcosm of their whole fan base. It's like, only we're equipped to deal with this next level, or only we're equipped to deal with the CFP, or only we're equipped to deal with, and it's just ridiculous, in my opinion. So I felt like that was real funny. Like, if you look at our pass blocking grades are great. Our run blocking grades aren't the best, but our pass blocking grades are the best, are really good. So.
We also didn't have a healthy offensive, like, we've been missing, well, number one, we were missing our starting center from basically the jump. We've been missing one of our starting offensive guards, if you talk about pass blocking, since Michigan State, who's running back into form from injury now. But, by the way, our offensive line was good enough to beat that vaunted, ready for the Big Ten defensive line at Oregon.
Come on.
Did Mike take some shots? Yes, he did, but DJ had 100 yards in that game.
And what's weird is, like, my thought process is, like, you're only validating your quote-unquote trench play by your future classes. It's not about what's happening on the field or anything like that. You're basically trying to say you're going to be equipped because you have these highly ranked guys. At the end of the day, what's happening on the field? What's the classification of the guys that are actually playing on the field right now? Like, are they going to be here next year? Or why are you focused on freshmen or juniors that are in high school that aren't going to be on the field for the first year of the Big Ten play, or even the second year of it? So it's kind of a weird, but anyway, I felt like it was a stupid tweet.
My three-word refutation about only relying on recruiting rankings as regards offensive line play: Parker Brailsford exists. Outplaying a senior, in my money, and I don't just say this because I'm a Husky fan, but he's making a very, very strong case that he should be the all-conference center, not JPJ down at Oregon, and that's no disrespect to JPJ, but not to shout out my own tweets or my own funny tweets, but there was a comment that I made about a bear. There was a funny gif of a video of a bear being scared by his own reflection, and I said that that might be a USC defensive tackle after he just got owned by a freshman.
Bro, you got that video I sent you of Nate Kalepo popping him upside the head.
Yep. That is out of place.
He just popped him upside the head.
Yeah, just
that's South Seattle, baby. Stand up, South End.
Yep. But again, it's how Oregon wins championships is recruiting rankings. That's the only championships that Oregon wins. So
it's so obvious they're using the AP poll based on composite too. Mm-hmm. It's just what they think a team can do based on their recruiting rankings. If you look at it, it's so glaring. Like even the teams that have two losses are like, you know, they should be further down, but they're just keeping them in that kind of second tier type echelon to kind of keep them relevant. And it's old.
Yep.
It's like they're overvaluing the SEC like this is, you know, 5-6 years ago. It's like, what do your eyes tell you about the SEC?
Yeah. Well, and I'm not necessarily a fan of the expansion of the playoff. I think it dilutes the game, and I think it's trying to make it too much like college basketball, and college football is not. That said, this would be a year where I'd actually like to see the 12-team playoff, because a lot of what we're talking about, a lot of those teams would be proven frauds on the field if the 12-team playoff was a thing this year.
Yep, agreed.
But we all can see it. But, you know, we all can see it. And I will give credit. Oregon is not a team that I would say is fraudulent.
No, not at all. During that game, I think I tweeted out that these are two top four teams. You know, now, one of them had to lose at the end of the day. I don't think Michigan has proven anything. I don't think Florida State has proven anything. I haven't seen Ohio State play good offense.
Yeah, honestly.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
To rank Michigan first or second all year long when they haven't played a ranked team until this week is crazy.
I mean, Rutgers is turning out to be better than people thought they were going to be this year. But still, it's fucking Rutgers.
Who wins? I guess at home, away, neutral field, Arizona or Rutgers? Like, let's be honest. You know what I'm saying?
So no contest.
We got disrespected for beating them by 7, and then now in hindsight, they're giving people value for beating them after we beat them, but we're not getting the value for it.
Right.
So it is what it is, man. Stupid committee.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's move into a discussion of USC. And dear Lord, that was a fun football game to watch, unless you were participating in a couple of text conversations with people that should star in a UW version of the Dr. Pepper first play of the game commercial. Shouts out to our buddy, to Jake Appetite's buddy, UW.
Shout
our former colleague. Yeah, shouts to you, UW.
Shout out, Leah, man.
Slightly overreactionary early in that football game. That's all I'll say.
It's okay. It's okay. It happens.
Rest.
I will say, I was a very, very happy Husky fan very early on in that football game, seeing what we had some discussions about on last week's episode, backs and tight ends. And I think the offense, looking back in hindsight, had gone very, very vanilla, and all of the things that were like, where is this that we saw so much of last year and at the first part of this year, like the motion getting, one of my favorite things was seeing like middle screens like to Rome a couple of times, like just really making the defense think about it. Like that was off of a couple weeks where Grubb was C at best in terms of the play calling. That man was in his bag on Saturday, and that was fucking fun.
Hey, I gotta give you props, man. That's how you started off the show. You know, you put some emphasis on the fact that, you know, shout out to 206 Mafia. You put some emphasis on, you know, backs.
I'm not gonna make anybody listen to me rap again. Don't I promise. I'm done. Retired.
You put the emphasis on the keys to the game, man, and it was exactly the recipe, you know, for beating USC, man. So shout out to you for seeing that.
Yeah. I'm not always right, but I occasionally do have my moments. Or I would say I'm not often right, but I have my moments every once in a while. But yeah, that first drive was just gorgeous. Obviously the play to Dev, Heisman moment part two, more to come. But what did you gentlemen all think of this and things that you loved about that game?
So I have one play that in all the craziness, kind of all the other crazy plays and amazing moments in that game kind of got lost. But early in the game, the back shoulder throw to Josh Cuevas, that dude's going to be a problem next year.
Dude's going to be a problem the rest of this season.
Yeah. But I mean, right now, granted he got into some games late early in the season and made a couple big plays, but right now he's 4 for 164. That's a big play tight end, averaging 41 yards a catch. But yeah, that dude's going to be a problem. And then seeing him, pulling in short yardage and getting a running start and powering into the end zone for DJ. I'm really excited for what Josh Cuevas is going to bring to this team. Like Hooligan said, the rest of this year and into the Big Ten play, like we're talking about, getting that physical play, but also really athletic play out of our tight ends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Hood and I were on that sideline when Mike made that throw, and I know I've seen it before, but just how the precision in that throw in that cover two hole, like back shoulder, the corner couldn't adjust because the ball came out so fast and it was in a perfect spot, and it was just a perfect pinpoint accurate throw. That was the second best throw of the game, as we know, but the first was. But my takeaway is kind of, I had the same thoughts as Ryan Grubb, is that was Mike Penix's best game as a Husky. His best game graded as a Husky, where he literally said he graded, you know, he had two basically negative plays and one was the touchdown pass, and that's only because of his ball security. You know, while he was scrambling out, you really can't fault him for the tip pass. You're not going to see many 6'6 linebackers with that wingspan to be able to tip that. Otherwise, that's a touchdown. He played a flawless game to me. And yeah, that was just my takeaway. You know, we knew they were going to score. I have a lot of respect for Caleb, seeing him in person live. He's legit for sure. His playmaking ability is uncanny. He should have been sacked at least 6 times and just pulled out of it. So I respect him, but Mike really stole the show, and he was just a consummate, you know, just steady the whole game, which I really loved. We didn't need anything over the top from him, and we didn't get that. But we all know the king of the night was DJ and what he did.
I was going to say, that does remind me of a whole host of stupid tweets that I saw, and anybody that was bagging on Caleb Williams for the reaction and how, you know, disappointed he was after that game, fuck all the way off. Those are stupid tweets. But Darker Knight, go ahead. Yeah. Sorry, I just wanted to chime in there before we got too far afield.
Oh, no, I was trying to keep up with DJ's rushing yards. It was hard to keep up. I was like, gosh, how many yards does he have now? I kept looking at the field and looking at the screen. I was like, I don't know, but he has hella. I swear, it seemed like every carry he had was at least like 8 to 10 yards. And then besides the ones that he broke deep, I'm like, God, I feel like he can break a deep one just whenever the ball's in his hand. I was like, feed him. You know, I was just hoping Grubb stayed with it, and I was glad he did. Like, don't go away from it. Like, stay with it. It's okay if Mike's not necessarily the star. He already had his Heisman moment. Like, feed what's working, because that's only going to open up your offense moving forward. But yeah,
that feeds into obviously mine. If there's been anybody in the Husky fan base that has any type of platform that has been talking about winning the damn game on the ground, it has been me.
Yep.
I am. Mm-hmm. It is what this is game 2021, and this is the first time that Grubb has won the game on the ground. And personally, I was significantly appreciative. I know Darker Knight knows. I kept looking at him, fake crying, like, thank God, this is beautiful. You know, I was looking at him like, this is how easy it is if you stick to it. Now, DJ wasn't necessarily, according to Grubb and Co., wasn't necessarily healthy, you know, early in the season. But it wasn't even just DJ. You know, it was Will Nixon. Tybo. It was Tybo getting in the game. And now, granted, the offensive line, you know, they all should have deserved the power player of the week. But the offensive line showed up. But it was the running game in general. DJ had a big game, but the other two complimented him very well, and it was something that Grubb stuck with. You know, when it was a 3-yard gain or a 2-yard gain or a 5-yard gain, Grubb didn't decide to do a play-action bomb. It was like, all right, well, we got 2-3. Let's run it again. You know, and that's what I wanted to see. And this is the, you know, what Arizona State was the first game that I patted the defense on the back and was like, hey, this is the first game we've won with our defense. It's not the passing attack. Now, this is a game that they've shown that they can win differently. And that's what you look forward to when you talk about CFP, Pac-12 championship, national title, is you have to be able to win games in a multitude of ways. And this was the first insight to that. So that was probably my primary takeaway, was the fact that Grubb was disciplined in himself and able to call a game where he stuck to the run game when it was working.
Yep. Yeah. I have a hard time saying it was anything other than like an A or A plus play calling game from Coach Grubb. I would be very, very, I would argue strenuously with even a Husky fan that said, oh no, he missed some shots here. This wasn't great. No, great game from Grubb. And I will say on that topic, how nice to see the continued development of a young player like Tybo Rogers, giving DJ a blow after all of the work that he did in crucial situations. The light bulb is starting to hit neon bright territory for Mr. Rogers, and it's going to be some great days in our neighborhood going forward with him toting the rock.
I was just going to say, no, a lot of things I noticed. The reason why a lot of those holds are so big is, if you notice, I was looking at the linebackers, like, I don't want to pick on Tackett Curtis, but there was a lot of business decisions being made in there after a while.
Dude,
a lot of people did not want to tackle him. They was finding ways to get blocked, going around certain guys, and his running style is really becoming an imprint on the offense as well, where you're noticing the offensive line is starting to feed off of his running style as well.
Yep.
They know he's going to go downhill. You notice DJ's now getting upfield faster. He's planting his foot in the ground and getting upfield on those tosses. He's not relying on just an outside rush. Yep. You know, he's seeing the lanes better. They're blocking for him a lot better. They're blocking more aggressively, and I think it's just meshing together perfectly.
And the offensive line decided to pick one hell of a game to really show out. I mean, not even just the offensive line, just the offense in general. You know, we, you know, you and I were talking about we wanted to see some physicality from the defense, but seeing it from special teams, what Himes putting people on is on their ass. Carson, first kickoff of the game, smacking the hell out of, I think, Kalen Bullock, and then just standing over him.
Mm-hmm.
That's their best player on defense and one of their enforcers, and you just like, what's up, you know? And that was the tone of the game. Jeremy with a pancake. Jalen, I think Jalen on the last rushing touchdown for DJ sealed a linebacker or a DB. Quavis, you saw Quentin Moore laughing at a guy that he put on his ass. You know G-Bow. What I mean? Multiple times.
G-Bow flattened a safety coming across.
Twice. The first time he did, he struggled to get up. And the second time he got up trying to act like, you know, it was a personal foul or something. So, like, it was the receivers also, you know, putting guys on their ass.
Giles Jackson on that sweep from the end zone.
Yep. Sealed linebacker.
Yep.
I don't think it was Gentry, but sealed a linebacker.
I don't think it was Gentry, but yeah, sealed him up completely. and gave Dylan that huge, huge hole.
And I mean, and that was a, I think I tweeted about it at the time. Like, that was a huge guts play call in that situation, because we were talking about it in the pre-show. Like, DJ started with, you know, that run, he was in the end zone. Like, and whew,
I'm thinking that, I mean, it took a while for us to get here, but I'm glad Grubb's starting to realize the team is feeding off the run game more than the passing game.
And it opens up so much.
It opens up all that, because now you don't know what's coming.
I was just going to say, just imagine once he starts to realize that, or fully realizes that, and then we get J-Mac back.
Oh, stop.
The middle of the field is going to be...
We've always felt like Julius Boileau was a pass-blocking... you know, he feels like he's more of a tackle, but like a pass-blocking guard. But he's definitely, you know, since he's come back from injury, enhanced his physicality in the run game. You can definitely, you said there were business decisions being made. They didn't even want to get blocked either. They were falling down and voluntarily trying to go under blocks. And Parker and Nate are assholes, with all due respect to their families and them as they are physical players. They're going to throw all of their weight on you. Parker, you know, light, but great with his leverage, a power player, sticky as hell, sticky hands without holding. It's ridiculous. So I do think that this this offensive line is definitely, like you were saying, Darker Knight, is feeding off of the running game for sure. And it actually is getting them in the rhythm for the pass game. Like, they're getting into some groove bullying these defensive linemen, and then it's making them more comfortable in the pass game for sure.
Yep. And I think we've talked about the SC game for about 10-15 minutes. I don't think we should go any farther without sending both a huge collective pat on the back and hug and everything all above. You know, support to ZTF. What a huge play. What a performance to show up and play for your brothers, you know, in the midst of the pain and grief. Husky Nation has nothing but respect and love for you, ZTF, and we're so glad you're still with this team, and shouts to you, man.
When I found out that he didn't, you know, he didn't go home and all that kind of stuff and decided to stick it out, he hadn't talked to anybody really. That was wild.
Yeah. I mean, like, Softy tweeted about that, saying that he didn't go home and he hasn't seen his mom or anything like that since that happened, and his mom and all his family going to be there at the Utah game. Like, y'all better, I can't make it to this game this weekend, but y'all better cheer for that man harder than you ever have. For real. Yep.
Come unglued when ZTF gets announced on Saturday, dog fans. Just, it's not quite senior day, but we can recognize him with that kind of noise twice, because he deserves it. And
absolutely. Absolutely.
And then just another narrative. I definitely, it's not as somber, I guess, but I definitely want to shout out Elijah Jackson for sure. You got to consider that this is one of the best, you know, pass offenses in the country, you know, and to be honest, you know, there was a lot of people that, you know, not even just this week, you know, but previous weeks have really been picking on them and things like that. If you really look at a lot of these reps in the USC game, there were some push-offs after watching the second go around, where these receivers are pushing off not only just him, but the Nunley as well, the Nunley coverage as well. And then also, too, you got to realize that people like Thaddeus Dixon was CB1 at his last stop and got a bunch of reps. Jabbar Muhammad, for 2-3 years, got a bunch of CB1 reps. Elijah Jackson has been on campus for 4 years and hasn't necessarily been healthy the whole time. This is his first year as a starter in the year where the Pac-12 is the best it's ever been. So, in my opinion, at the hardest position to play in football, you've got to give, you know, somebody like Elijah Jackson some leeway to learn during these reps. And he's doing one hell of a job making throws difficult. Obviously, you're going up against a Heisman contender, potential first round pick. And these are off of scramble drills, too. So it's not like they're on script and things like that. And you have to kind of deviate a lot of the, I wouldn't say blame, but deviate a lot of some of the technique to some of the coaching off, because it wasn't just him that didn't have ball skills this game. There's only been one DB this year or two DBs this year that have shown any inclination to attack the ball when it's in the air, and that's been Meech and Cam Fab. Yep. So that's an over, and that's not even in the cornerback room. So there is an overarching kind of narrative that's probably going to come out of that room, but people are going to publicly have to really, really back off of Elijah Jackson. We haven't lost any game on his watch. So let's not do that. Definitely big up a guy who's going to definitely need the confidence coming down the stretch for sure.
I mean, Kevin King and Byron Murphy and the whole secondary room wasn't what they were in 2016 and 2015. Like, that's the parallel. It's like where our secondary room in terms of the experience outside of Jabbar and you can make the comment, like, even Dom, like, as experienced as Dom is, it's his first year playing full-time in the spot that he should have been playing all along. And I will say, while we're on the subject of the USC game, huge pat on the back to Dom Hampton as well. I think he was our leading tackler in the game, was right where he needed to be.
He different.
Yep. And it's going to be another big week for Dom this week because he's going to be needed against Utah, but we'll talk about that in a bit. We will be back momentarily. Yeah, I mean, and I think that's a great point that, I mean, it's one thing to notice, you know, occasionally, like, if a player struggles, but again, like, we've seen so many push-offs this year. I mean, I think it brings to my mind, you know, the piece that came out with comments from Dev Culp about some of the issues that he had with drops and how fans were responding, you know, what was said about him. And, like, it's, like, it's okay to be critical, but there is certainly a part of the fan base that just takes things way, way, way too far on social media. They're just kids. Like, they really are just kids. And particularly, you know, EJ in his first year of starting, like, it's one thing in that situation. I mean, like, and I'm guilty of it too. And, you know, continuing to rip and riff on the opera singer thing, but that was a fifth year senior, and there's levels to this, and he'd seen the field a bunch and had no business jumping out of the end zone versus EJ, who's playing what had started his ninth game. Like,
and you can be tactful in doing so. Like, keep it about football, bro. Like, one thing that I tweeted immediately, and it wasn't even after, I think, a play of his, it was a play of, like, I think it was Nunley's play, where I was like, where's the, like, who's coaching the ball skills? Like, I spoke to that.
It's, I think we should be much more quick to criticize coaching than players.
And I agree, because if it's not just sport. One player, that's a trend, you know. It's not just one player that's not playing the ball when it's in the air at corner. We saw it with Jabbar versus Stanford. You're on top of a receiver in cover three multiple times. And he still, like, makes the play on the ball. You're on top of the play. You're in position. So, you know, the technique is fine. But once the ball's in there, what are we teaching these guys to do? You know, how many reps are they getting at high point? I understand he's a small guy. And I don't know how to say his last name. But number 13 from Stanford is a big dude. But
Iomanor, I think. Yeah.
Iomanor, yeah. Just that's the toughest. I'll just say, man, that's the toughest position to play. And that's a guy who has a ton of potential. He's got two more years of eligibility, and we're going to need him next year and the year after. And that position's all about confidence. If you're critiquing anything, critique it tactfully and critique it about his technique or about things he can develop, things he can go into the bank and work with. You know, Michelle Powell got better because he worked with guys like Kevin Jones in the offseason. The receivers got better. Rome, Jalen, Jeremy got better because they work with guys like Route God. You got to put in that effort. And if they don't know what they need to do, then they're just going to sulk about the critique. They're not going to go and seek out the direct fundamental help they're going to need. Yep. So,
another guy who's taken a huge step forward in that room this year. And it comes with experience, and unfortunately, sometimes you just learn from doing things wrong and then you learn to do things right. Camp Fab. I'm not disrespecting Camp Fab. Like, he had some struggles. And he's been rock solid for us. And like I sent it in, I think, either a GC or in one of my text conversations before the game last week, like when they heard like, oh, Thule and Camfab are more likely to go. And I'm like, yes. Like, there's development. Like,
yeah. And these are, and the guys we recruit, obviously the guys, these are some of CP's guys, but they're mental giants. That was part of the recruiting process. What's your foundation like? When things get, you know, tough, when there's adverse times, how are you going to bounce back? And the fact that, you know, you see a player that was recruited by that staff who has that foundation, has that mental toughness, kind of struggling with the process. Guys like Dev, I'm at points. Guys like EJ at points. We're going to have to big them up, you know, because we're going to need them down the stretch. Who, you know, Devon Banks is hurt. You know, Thad balled the hell out. They wasn't even going to Thad's side. You know, I mean, you're going to need EJ when it comes to, you know, the CFP and when it comes to the conference championship game. And he doesn't need to be looking down at the ground, you know, when you're having a conversation with him. It needs to be that confident. So.
Yep. Right now, these are our guys and we should be supporting them. Like, that's the other thing, and I can't stress this enough, and we can't stress this enough. Development is not linear. It's not 1 + 2 = 3 + 2 = 5 + 4 = 9. It's 1 + 2 = 3 + 1, you know, it's 4. And then wait, all of a sudden he's at 10. Like, these things, case in point, we talked a little bit about Dev Cult. Dev struggled with drops early in his career, kind of same issues. How rock solid, reliable. I mean, like, as great as the play was from Mike, it's equally as great a play from Dev with the defender all over him, like
confident.
And shouts to the USC defender trying to draw a stupid call from a Pac-12 ref, like 4 seconds after Dev's on the ground. Oh, I'm going to punch the ball out to say, oh, he didn't complete the catch. Like, no. Nah. Dev, shouts to you for that play and like, grip strength. Woo!
Shout outs for you for staying the course. Yep. That's half the battle. They ain't got nothing to do with football. Shout out to you for staying the course.
All right, let's go ahead and anything. Any final thoughts on SC, or should we go ahead and move on to our look around the conference?
Beat Oregon.
Yeah,
please.
Do
the Lord's work.
I want to hear that all fucking night Saturday. All right. Well, starting in our look around the conference is an 11 o'clock kick on Pac-12 Network. The number 21 Arizona Wildcats are a 10.5 point favorite in Folsom Field, with the over under at 54.5. I'll go first on this one. I'm on Zona. I think Zona covers. I don't think it's a particularly big challenge. I think Deion is, as much as I think he's doing some good things for Colorado, I think the offensive coordinator promotion was a sign of panic for a problem that can't be fixed in the course of the same season. You can't portal in an entirely new offensive line in the middle of a year. And so I'm on Zona and I don't think it's close.
Yeah, that offense looked lost without John Lewis. I don't know why he made that move. That wasn't where you were struggling. It's like, why? I think Arizona walks all over them from the moment the ball's in the air.
Yep.
Yeah, this one's not going to be close at all. Arizona by, I think, 3 possessions.
In this one, man, I did it last week, and I'm going to do it again. I got Colorado in this one.
All right. We'll move on to a 1 o'clock kick on ESPN2 with two teams that are playing like number 2. And I don't mean that in a good way. I don't mean that as like the second best team in the country, number two. We'll just say it that way. And that is the losers of five straight Washington State Cougars heading to Berkeley to play Cal, who is a 1-point favorite with the over under at 59.5. I'm on the under on this one. I don't know if y'all are paying attention, but Washington State just scored all of 7 points against the vaunted defensive power known as Stanford at home. I will take Cal. I'll take the under, and I think Cal wins by 7, 10, if not maybe a couple of touchdowns or more.
I got the same thing. I'll take under. I think Cal definitely walks away with it. Like, Dickert's comments were very concerning. Like, he basically was saying that players have already quit.
It sounds like the entire team has quit, players, coaches alike. It sounds like he's just not involved in that team at all.
Once they lost like the second game, it was almost like, if we're not playing for the conference championship game, then like, why are we here?
Yeah. I will say it's crazy to have that team coming into your stadium and only be favored by one. So that just tells you where both of these teams are at.
Clearly it's by virtue of, you know, John Wilner's best friend, like how great a coach he is that they're favored by a single point.
Yeah, give me the better coach team. I'm going with Cal.
Yeah,
if you want to see, yep. Yeah, agreed. But that's not a high bar to jump over. If you want to see more stupid tweets, at Wilner Hotline. moving right along, a 2:30 kick on Pac-12 Network. The aforementioned, fresh off a 10-7 victory on the Palouse, Stanford Cardinal travel down to Corvallis to play number 12 Oregon State, who is a 20.5-point favorite with the over-under at 54.5.
Give me Stanford.
Yeah, 20.5 is way too much.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a super confident pick, but I definitely feel like they found some type of groove, you know, and the coaching staff and the players have started to believe. And you saw early in the year, I mean, there's a correlation, but you saw early in the year how much belief mattered to Colorado. You know, they beat teams they probably shouldn't have beat, you know, so if you're believing in your staff and believing in your process, oh yeah, I'm taking Colorado Stanford is
to cover or to win straight up.
To win, yeah. I believe they're going to win this one.
Oof,
I've been waiting all year. I picked Colorado versus Oregon State last week too. Like, I think Oregon State's a good team, but it definitely feels like they're the team this year that's going to have that damn kind of loss. And maybe that was Wazoo. Maybe that was Wazoo early, but Wazoo was a good team early in the season when they had, you know, they were kind of trying
emphasis
to
on was.
I got Stanford.
Any other thoughts on that one?
I'm kind of with Hood, but I also want Oregon State for my own rooting interests. But yeah, 20.5 is crazy, but yep. I think it's maybe a one score. 10 points, maybe something like that. But I'm going to take Oregon State.
Yep. I think Oregon State wins
a close one.
Yeah. I think they pull, I think Oregon State pulls away late to win by like 14-17. I still think that they are pretty damn well coached. And I think there's a lot in front of them to have. There's rumors that game day could be headed to Corvallis next weekend for our game. If both teams handle their business this weekend, I do think in big games, Jonathan Smith does a pretty decent job outside of that Washington State game. So I think that I don't think Oregon State covers, but I think they win this one. Moving on to a 6 p.m. game against teams that just don't really know how to offense. And that is ASU on the road at the Rose Bowl against UCLA, who is a 17-point favorite with the over-under at 44.5. Thoughts?
The under is free money. That's my thoughts.
Free money, bro. Can both teams lose?
No, I don't think they can. And I think the only way that that UCLA covers that one is that, I mean, or ASU is down to six offensive linemen that can play right now. That's not a great recipe when you're going up against the Murphy brothers and Leatu Latu. That's a recipe for whoever takes snaps behind center at Arizona State to, and they're already, like, I think Borgay got hurt last week. Rashad is already out. Like, I think they're back down to a walk-on at quarterback. It's not good news for ASU. I think
it's ugly.
It's ugly. I think my route to a UCLA cover is again that ASU just doesn't offense at all, and UCLA runs the ball enough to get up by a couple of scores anyway, even despite their issues moving the football. But yeah, that's definitely an under.
Yeah, I got UCLA. Good call on the offensive lineman and the UCLA front. Uh-huh. That's gonna be a disaster.
Yeah, watching Borgay barely get peeled up off the field and make it to the sidelines, like, yeah, okay. There goes their offense. That's their point guard. He gone.
All right. Moving on to the second biggest game in the conference this weekend, and that is a 7:30 p.m. kick on Fox. And that is USC without their defensive coordinator heading up to Eugene to play the number six Ducks, who are a 15.5 point favorite with the over under at 75.5.
I need a bounce back game from the USC defense. Rally around that firing of the defensive coordinator.
They not watching film though, so damn.
What? Yeah, that's a good point. But still, I need Caleb to go nuclear. I don't care if he puts his name back in the Heisman race. I want him to score a million.
I want them to make Bo Nix look like Bo Peep.
That's crazy.
Oh,
hey, man. I got USC, man. That 75 is like ours, bro. We almost got that in the first half. It was,
28. Yeah, so it was was it 63?
No, it was 76, and ours was 76.5, I think, last week. And we were at 63 after the first half. I sent it to a GC that I'm in. I'm like, yeah, it's the end of the first half, and the over is 13 points away.
You got money.
Is Marshawn Lloyd back this week?
That's the big question. If Marshawn Lloyd is back this week, this game gets really spicy. And by the way, this is Pac-12 After Dark on Fox. Mm-hmm. This game could be a hell of a lot of fun. Hey,
and Bucky hasn't been practicing either, so.
Yeah, but I think Bucky's going to go.
He'll play, but I mean, he was not healthy, for sure.
He was a little gimpy.
But, I mean, do you have to be healthy to run for 150 on
Bucky
USC?
Bucky, go and sit this one out, player.
Please, take a day off. Jordan, you know, James, I think
business decision.
Prep for the combine. It's all right. NIL ain't paying no more.
It's just hard for me to think that USC's defense is going to...
I mean, they didn't. It was clear they didn't want to play for Grinch. If you see that clip of him trying to rally
down,
coming from the air, like, all right, guys, you ready? Oh, nobody, okay, right.
Ready, break. Oh, fire. Oh, okay.
So you'd be. I mean, they got the athletes. You'd be surprised if they just switch up something, become a little more aggressive, and try to rally around their firing. And I'm not sure who is promoted.
Shane Nua and another guy, I forgot who it was, but
what did Nua say in one of those press conferences? He said something like, I don't care if we go into the game with one play call on defense as long as they play fast and physical.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all right, okay.
Apparently, you saw a lot of people out of California saying, like, this is the guy that deserved it the whole time, and blah 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 blah. And shout out to Dante Williams for being
trying to prove it.
Person on the totem pole.
Yeah. That said, in terms of, I think Oregon wins. I hate to say this. I don't get me wrong. I'd love to see it if they don't. I think Oregon wins. I don't think they cover. I think this one could be a little spicy, but I think Oregon wins by a touchdown or maybe 10 points. But I think it's, I think there's going to be some fireworks, maybe not quite to the same level as what we saw in the Coliseum last Saturday, but I think that there are going to be points of plenty on for both sides.
I agree. It's going to be up to
Caleb. Bear's going to turn into Grizzly this week and not Teddy like it was last week, and he's going to show up in this game. Stop the run.
And he was Builder versus us.
He was trying to find his final form.
That boy was looking for honey.
The stuffing out of him.
He was out there looking for honey.
Oh, man.
Preventing forest fires and everything.
All of them. And that man, the Coca-Cola.
Oh, God.
Oh, man.
All right. So I'm moving on to the big, big matchup in the conference this week. A 12:30 kick on Fox at Husky Stadium. It's the number 18 Utes coming to town to play the number 5 Washington Huskies, who are a 9.5 point favorite, over under at 49.5. What do we think?
I mean, I want to see us play with a little more physicality up front on the defensive line. I think we do that. I think we can corral the pig farmer. I think playing Caleb, you done seen the upper echelon, the top quarterback you're going to face all year. So you've already seen what that's like, and no one else is going to be able to evade and be as elusive as he was. So you play physical enough, you control the edges. This is definitely going to be a front seven type of game.
Yep.
I actually think you're going to see a really good game from our corners. I think EJ will have a bounce back game. I was listening to Murrell talk about potentially using him more as the boundary corner because he plays better with his eyes back to the quarterback and playing off instead of a lot of the other coverages where kind of flipped where Thaddeus was playing last week. So I think that's going to help as well. But yeah, defensively with the crowd on 10, I just think we're going to be too much for Utah. So I got the Dogs winning 38-20.
Okay. All right. J-Cap, what do you think? Predictions.
Obviously the key that everyone's going to be talking about for the rest of the time up to the game is Jonah Ellis versus our tackles. So I think as long as Troy and Roger can hold down and do their job, I don't think this one's close. Utah's not scoring more than, I mean, Darker Knight just gave them 20. I don't think they're crossing 17. I think that this is going to be something that, provided, like I said, Troy and Roger hold down that defense and Joan Ellis in particular, this is probably going to be something where we're 35, I'll say 35-17.
Yeah, I'm on that same boat. Everybody got 17. I don't know what it was, but that's in my head too. I don't think, we got that 3 versus USC. I don't think we scored 3 this game. I think it's going to be touchdowns galore. I've been kind of going back between 42 and 49, but I'll go 42 out of respect for Kay Whitty and Scaley. I think they'll figure something out to stop the 50 burger. But yeah, I got 42-17. I'm not confident in their back end. Their back end is where they brought back the majority of their experience, and they're still getting toasted. So, I'm not really, Jonah Ellis is a great player, but we have, if there's, we talk about strength of schedule, we have played the best teams in the conference. There's nothing that, and also too, you think of like Texas and UCLA last year, these tackles have seen much better than Jonah Ellis. And a lot of his moves have been like counter moves, or they've been, spin moves and things like that. How often do you see people in Troy or Roger's chest? You rarely see that. They're really good with playing their hands. Troy loves snatching your arm. So I think they're a great counter for somebody like Jonah Ellis. And name me a linebacker that they have. Okay, that's into that. All right, so I definitely feel like I definitely feel like the run game is going to get going. You still pick that up. You get 90-plus from DJ, and you probably get, I'd say, between 150, 200 on the ground in total. So, yeah, I definitely feel like this is going to be a nice little balance attack, for sure.
And it's going to need to be because the weather is going to be a factor. It's looking like an 80% chance of rain.
Of rain, yeah.
They're talking about some, you know, steady wind in the teens and gusts up to 30. So, I think that that's just like we saw. I mean, and Bryson Barnes has some ability and he does have a decent-ish arm, but just like we saw last year with the Oregon State game, I think that's going to impact their ability to try and be multidimensional on offense more than it impacts our ability to be multidimensional on offense. I think what we saw with Grubb getting in his bag, I think that we brought back some of that short and intermediate passing game that we hadn't seen in a while against USC, and I think if the weather's a factor, that's one way that you can kind of mitigate that a little bit, is, and particularly the other pieces, like I think Junior Tafuna in the middle of their defense is a solid player. But I think you also can mitigate the impact that he can have on our passing game with some of that short game, with some of that screen game that we saw, that like middle or tunnel screen to roam over the middle.
Outside run.
This could be another big game for, I could see this being a really big game for Jeremy Bernard. Coming out party for Jeremy. And I think certainly, of course, that the tight ends are going to be important too. One thing that I'm going to make a little bit of a hot take or a bold prediction, if I can borrow a bit from Locked On Huskies, I think we're going to get at least a few turnovers in this game, and I think we're going to see a fumble caused on kickoff coverage by Washington. I think we're going to blast a returner this time and jar a ball loose and get a short field out of it. Score-wise, I think I'm going to go 38-13. I think we cover. I think it's relatively close for a while in the first half, but I think where this one gets really interesting, and I think a sign very much for the positive, or like as pleased as I was with what we saw out of the first drive last week, I think if we can get a couple of stops within like Utah's first three or four drives by coming down and getting them behind schedule and holding him to 2 or 3 yard runs and forcing him into third and longs, if we can get off the field. And this team, and even more so, we talked about it with the Oregon game. Utah is not built from play to play from behind. If they're double digits behind, they're going to be in a big, big world of hurt.
Yeah, it definitely feels like a Dylan Morris game.
Johnson.
Morris.
That too.
Oh, I like it. Oof. I apologize.
Give me it.
You all gravy.
You see the morning.
Second team. And also, too, you realize I said it's going to be I would like to see a 90 plus from DJ, but if you're running over 150 to 200, who's that second running back that's getting that run? You know what I mean? Exactly. I feel like you start to see some explosives from, you know, Will. We're seeing these refs are finally starting to allow Will to get his damn yards every single time he got a play. It was all 8 to 15 yards. It was always some damn hold. Uh-huh. And we're finally starting to see them allow our guys to block on the perimeter. So
I think that's a great call. And I think it's going to be kind of a little bit of, I hate to say the thunder and lightning, but I think they're going to get tired of having to wrap up, you know, Dylan, and, you know, Dylan's going to have those 6 and 7 yards, you know, even, four, you know, 3 to 7 yard carries for a while. And then we're going to, you know, spell him with Will or with Tybo, and there goes 15, there goes 20.
And then I Dylan think DJ is going to have 150.
I like it. On the other side of the ball, defensive player of the game predictions.
I'm going to go, you know, I'm this is like got me super excited. It had everybody excited in the offseason. But since Stanford, our pass rush, you know, with our top three top four, including Voy, Voy Sakai, has really been getting home. And not only getting home, but being actually extremely disciplined. You know what I mean? Like, people, it's funny, people were laughing at ZTF for doing his flip, but shit, he made Caleb run lateral, I'll tell you that. You know, he did his and then Braylon coming on strong with, what, 16 pressures versus Stanford, 9 pressures, so he's got 25 pressures in the last 2 weeks. He's gonna continue to get home, and I think, you know, me and Darker Knight talked about it just after ASU and Stanford. I was just like, these guys came back for these games. They came back for the Utahs and the USCs and the Oregons and the Oregon States. And, you know, they came back for the CFP in these big games. That's what they came back for. These were NFL players. They came back for these runs. So now down this stretch, we're not going to need, you know, you're not going to have the concerns about, are they emotionally in the game or are they? No, because this is the stretch that everybody had circled at the end of the year that they knew that was going to be tough. So. Oh, yeah.
I'm going to throw it back to 2020. Defensive player of the game. The aforementioned one of the defensive heroes from this past week. I think he's going to run it back this weekend, and it's going to be Zion Tuiloafatu'i. I will remind everybody of the second-to-last drive that Utah had back in 2020. First down and 10 at the 50. A run for 2 yards on second and 8. Jake Bentley sacked by ZTF for a loss of 1 yard to the Washington 49 on 3rd and 9. Jake Bentley sacked by ZTF for a loss of 10 yards to the Utah 41. I believe ZTF had more sacks than that in that game, but those two.
It was three.
Yeah.
Three with 2 forced fumbles.
Yeah, I think this is a big ZTF game.
I agree. Emily there too. Oh, come on, baby.
Yeah, we're all hanging out on the defensive line here. I'm going to go with the Utah boy getting it against his other team that everyone thought he might go to. So I'm going to take Voy.
Nice.
Ooh, whiskey at the most clutch defensive play of the game.
Uh-huh. Easily.
Emphasis on the clutch.
Facts, bro.
I got that jersey and I ain't fucking letting go.
Hines was second in, too.
The defensive line is low-hanging fruit because I think they're due for an 8-plus sack game, and I think it's going to happen on Saturday. And I think one of the beneficiaries is going to be Vince Nunley. So that's who I have like breaking out. I have him with 2 interceptions, and this really a standout because he's proven that he is a standout in the secondary when he's on the field, and I think him being back kind of shake the cobwebs off after the USC game, but really getting back in the flow of things. He's a natural leader, and I think you're going to see the defense and the back end have better communication as well.
Nice. All right. Any final thoughts on this one or other topics in general? Shouts to, I know women's basketball had 2 big wins this week.
I'm at 13 points now. Are you fucking serious?
Yeah. They got it done. Great class signed by Coach Tarr. Let me check the men's basketball score real quick.
They won by 8, 75-67, I think. So it wasn't a great performance, but you know, it was a dub nonetheless.
We've lost stack games. Stack them up. All right.
I did have one other thing on Utah. We talked about it briefly in one of our group chats. Pleasantly surprised by the emergence of Daniel Ngata on kickoff return. He was pretty close to breaking one a couple of times against USC. I think we could see a lot more explosion from the kicking game or kickoff return game, I should say, in this game and going down the stretch, because we do have a lot of weapons in that capacity with him and with Jeremy and Giles has experience back there. So we could see a lot of explosion coming there. So Hooligan, you said you predicted a big play on special teams to get a short field off a kickoff return. I think we'll probably, I want to see. That we would get a turnover on
special
teams, right?
Explosion that we've seen from Carson Bruner,
right?
Maurice Himes,
Tristan Dunn.
Oh, shit, that guy took somebody's head off.
Yeah, right.
That kind of thing.
I think we could see one on the other side in the receiving game from Daniel Ngata, because it's nice to see him get involved in the game. He transferred here from Arizona State, and we all were kind of curious as to what kind of impact he would make on this team. And I think he, at least over the last couple of weeks, has found his avenue into making that impact.
Yep. Great call. Great call. All right. Well, I think that about does it. Thanks for listening. Go Dogs.
Go Dogs, baby.
You can support this podcast at podcasters.spotify.com/pod/show/soundthesirenpod.uw/support. Thanks. Go Dogs.